Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hey, this is Mark Striegel. Welcome to another edition of the Talking Metal Podcast. On today's episode, we have the one, the only Jeff Tate, formerly of Queensryche, currently of Operation Mindcrime. And today's interview was conducted by the co-host of today's episode, Emily, my wife. Hey, how are you?
Oh, this is my microphone, huh? Hi.
Hi. Yes, that would be your microphone, definitely. And you not only got this interview done, which I had no doubt you would be able to do because you know your rock and you know your metal, but I was more worried about you technically getting everything hooked up and that it would actually record and that we'd actually be able to capture the interview you were going to do. That was what I was actually stressing out over.
I know you were sitting there biting your nails. But I have a college degree. I'm a pretty smart girl. I figured it out. Had to do a few different programs and Skype and right. And like some recorder thing, but it was good. But I was extremely distracted that I was talking into a microphone with a headphone so I could hear myself, but there was like major reverb on my mic.
Yeah.
And but I kept on telling myself, well, Jeff can't hear it like that.
No, he couldn't hear that. And that actually is not on the recorded portion of the interview, which I went through. So no worries on that. And I leave the house to go to work, and a lot of these interviews take place during the day. And I must admit that we've, through the years, lost a lot of great interviews simply because people are like, can you record an interview with such and such at 2 p.m. on a Tuesday? And I can't do that. Usually, sometimes I work from home and I'm able to take a break to do that. But Emily works full time, but we're lucky because she works from home, and that allowed us to get this Jeff Tate interview, which we wouldn't have gotten if it weren't for Emily. So thank you, number one, for doing that and bringing Jeff Tate back to Talking Metal. But also, I think we successfully did this, and I think in the future you should do some more.
Yeah, I think I'll get more comfortable as we go along. And I think I was a little bit stiff in the beginning, but luckily he was an amazing... I just enjoy talking to him, so he made it very easy on me because he was a good interview.
Yeah, I don't know about the stiff thing. I think you did a great job, especially considering we were both probably a little nervous about the technical end of things. And I find the over the phone interviews more difficult than the in person ones because you can look into somebody's eye. There's a chemistry, there's a vibe there in the room. Sometimes the over the phone interviews can be a little cold, which it was not the case with this interview.
Over the phone, everything is tough. Text is tough. Teleconferences with work is tough. So yeah, I mean, one on one is the best way to do it. But again, he was really awesome and fun to talk to.
And he's got a new record out. We're going to tell you all about that. Before we do, let's get into some classic Queensryche right now. There's so many great songs on the Operation Mindcrime record, but I do think this is probably one of my favorites, if not my favorite. This is The Needle Lies off of Operation Mindcrime, going way back to 1988. Let's check it out. Jeff Tate with Queensryche, and a classic Queensryche right there. And, you know, that was a concept record, Operation Mindcrime, and I'm psyched because Jeff is doing a concept record again, actually three records to be precise. The latest is the second album of the trilogy, again, a concept trilogy, if you will. It's called Resurrection. It is coming out in just a couple weeks, September 23rd. It might even be out if you're listening to this podcast late, but you know, definitely check it out. Resurrection. I had an opportunity to hear most of the record, and it's just fantastic, great stuff, and it brings him back to more of, you know, the concept type stuff that Queensryche is known for, and proggy sounds at times. Jeff in great voice on this record. Again, Resurrection is the record. And Emily has a great conversation about some of the saxophone parts on the record
with
Jeff.
That was my favorite part of the... Excuse me. That was my favorite part of the interview because, I don't know, you'll see why, but he's just a blast. I want to do like a whole nother interview just about saxophones with him. For real. I think we could.
Right on. Well, we're gonna hear the interview right now. And again, the album is Resurrection, and it's the second part of the musical trilogy from Jeff Tate, and just a great listen. So do yourself a favor and check out Resurrection. Again, it's Jeff Tate's Operation Mindcrime. A little unclear if Operation Mindcrime is a project or a band or what the deal is with that.
Well, I think even in the interview, he had a hard time coming up with, what do I call this? A
right.
Project or, you know. So I don't think it's clear to him either exactly what, do we have to call it anything?
Right on. Let's check it out. This is a track off the new Resurrection record by Jeff Tate's Operation Mindcrime, Left for Dead. And we're going to hear just a little sound sample of this, and then we'll get into Emily Striegel's interview with Jeff Tate on Talking Metal. And again, this song, Left for Dead, off Resurrection, is that's the album title. But you can, and the album, again, doesn't come out until September 23rd, but you can currently go buy this on iTunes. The single is out for this. Cool. Let's check it out. Left 4 Dead, followed by Emily Striegel's interview with Jeff Tate.
Greetings, Talking Metal listeners. This is Emily Striegel coming at you, and boy, do we have a treat for you today. I'm on the phone right now with iconic metal vocalist Jeff Tate. How are you today, Jeff?
I'm doing great, Emily. Nice talking with you. I love that word, iconic. It's hearing that in so many different applications these days.
Yeah, but you know, it's a word that I reserve for very few, so I don't like to overuse that word, but definitely we're really excited to have you on the podcast today.
Well, I feel very special. That's very nice. Thank you.
Good. So I'm hoping we can chat about your upcoming release coming out on September 23rd called Resurrection, which is the second part of a kind of musical trilogy. I've had a chance to listen to a few of the songs. It sounds fantastic. Tell us a bit about the concept of this being a trilogy.
Well, I've wanted to do a trilogy project for quite a while. I wanted to do a large-scale concept piece. And a trilogy seems like a real logical choice because it's, you know, represents three acts, you know, which is pretty common in screenwriting and storytelling. And so I thought that it would really be something special, although I didn't have a subject matter for a long time. So I just kind of kept the idea of a trilogy in the back of my mind and until I came up with the subject, and which I did on a rather unusual circumstances. I was hiking through Spain at the time. My wife and I were on the Camino de Santiago pilgrim trail across northern Spain, which is a 500-mile trek. And you know, you have a lot of time to think and contemplate, and that's kind of what I was doing. And all of a sudden, boom, I had this idea and started writing it down, and that led to an outline, which led to a kind of a preliminary script. And then when I got home, started, you know, composing music for the whole thing. And I don't know quite what to call it, a project, you know, the thing. So
the thing. I think that's what we should call it, the thing. No, yeah, I mean, it sounds like an amazing project. So I know the first album was called The Key, and that came out maybe a year ago or so. So I'm curious, did you write and record all three parts at the same time, just kind of continuing on what you were just talking about before?
Yeah, I did. Yeah, it was all kind of a big brainstorm, you know, creative roller coaster, if you will. And so wrote the story and then started, you know, composing music and recording all three albums at the same time. And then spent a year in between each album just kind of tightening it up and fixing certain things. And then, you know, mixing it, of course, and mastering, which takes a long time and quite a process. So, everything was kind of put together around the same period of time.
Okay. So are you tempted, just out of curiosity, are you tempted then to go back and change things? Like, do you start over-listening and over, you know, it would seem to me if you have an entire year between each one, you're going to start picking things apart and listening, or do you just kind of let go of it when you're done and you just waited to release this one, for example?
Well, I do kind of, after the recording, you kind of get everything in shape, right? And then you just kind of walk away from it for a while, and then you come back and you mix it at that point, and that way you're kind of hearing it fresh, you know, so it helps when it's mixing time, because mixing is a very tedious, detailed sort of endeavor. You know, we have to go in and get just the right balances on all the instruments and put them into kind of an audio perspective, and you put your special effects in and that kind of thing. So it's a lot of detail work that's, I think, best done when your ears are fresh and you're not worn down from, you know, recording, and which is tedious as well, but in a different way.
That makes complete sense. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's nice to walk away from the project, get away from it, and then you come back and you go, "Oh, wow, that's really cool. That's better than I remembered it being." You know.
Very cool. Very cool. That must be a great feeling. So earlier we heard the song "Left for Dead." Can you tell me a little bit about the meaning of this song? I know you've never really shied away lyrically from, you know, politically and socially relevant topics. So tell me about the meaning of this song, Left for Dead.
Well, it's definitely doesn't have anything to do with, you know, being a conservative or a liberal, if that's what you're getting at.
Me? No. No, I was just, you know, curious about the meaning of the song. Some of the lyrics left me.
Oh, okay. You know. Well, it's, you know, this is the second act of three-act play, basically. And the lead character, who we call H, is left for dead. You know, his partners, you know, hijack him and have him, they try to have him killed. But he is not dead, and he's left for dead, buried in a box in the desert. And he kind of claws his way out of the ground and begins to try to put his life back together, and that's kind of what that song is representative of.
So that's amazing to me. So this is really more than, you know, some kind of concept album. This is an actual storyline that you, like, how deep into this outline did you go when you said you came up with this idea? It sounds like you really wrote a lot of storyline for this character.
Yeah. Well, you know, when you develop characters, you got to give them, you know, a personality and a background and, you know, reason, you know, for them being there, you know. And and this guy's kind of interesting. You know, he developed this technology that he and his partners turned into a computer program that allows people to see reality in a new, completely different way. And what I mean by that is, you know, our reality that we know individually is not all the same. You know, we learn by example. We learn by definition. As children, for example, like we teach our kids, you know, this is a cat, this is a dog, a table, a chair, the earth, a leaf, you know. All those definitions form our reality. And the more we grow and the more we learn, our reality is expanded, but it's still dictated by other people explaining what things are. So you could really say that our reality is manufactured. And so what this program does is it kind of allows people to see a new reality. And thus, we see that it could be very lucrative for the people who develop this, right? And the partners that are involved with the development of this see that as well. And it becomes a split in the group where, you know, some want to do great things with this program and give it to the world for free because they think it's going to help, you know, further human beings and their development and will become a better, you know, world for it. And others want to exploit it for financial purposes. So you can see where, you know, when you start talking about billions of dollars in value, people do extreme things, and that's exactly what has happened to our lead character, Paige.
Seems like a very realistic kind of storyline that we can apply to real life.
Yeah, it's pretty realistic. You know, human nature is kind of easily predictable when it comes to greed and you know, money, you know.
This sounds extremely interesting. I'm really looking forward to hearing the second part of this trilogy. I know one of the songs on the album, another one I got to hear is called A Smear Campaign.
Mm-hmm.
And I know you play saxophone, right? Did you play on this track?
Uh-huh, yeah.
You did. And how long have you played saxophone? Is that something you still enjoy doing, or how often do you get to do that?
No, they have to whip me and beat me to get me to play it. No, I love saxophone. It's you know, they say that the saxophone is the closest instrument to the human voice yet invented. And I believe that's very true. It's so similar to singing.
It is. No, I agree. I played saxophone for like 1 year in band, but I totally know what you're talking about. Yeah.
Gosh, I suddenly had this vision of seeing you with the saxophone case, you know, carrying it to school, you know, standing at the bus stop or something like that. People, the ridicule involved.
Oh my gosh. Oh, here's and the worst part is, my dad was a saxophonist as well, and he made me play his saxophone.
Oh,
no. So all the other kids in band had these shiny new saxophones, and here I had this like old saxophone from like, yeah, it was pretty bad.
Up, scratched, smelling of your dad's
shit. It was nasty. Anyway, that's neither here nor there. That's saxophone talk. We'll talk saxophones. I have a saxophone podcast too. No, I'm just kidding.
Do?
I don't. I'm joking.
I've got some wonderful saxophone stories, actually, from my travels around the world with my saxophone.
I would love to hear those next time.
Well, you know, one of my saxophones, actually, a very rare saxophone that I was ridiculous. I shouldn't have ever brought it on the road, but I've never had anything stolen from me in my life, right, except for this saxophone. It's a Mark VI, Selma Mark VI, worth a ton of money, but I love playing it. It sounded great. And somebody stole it from a dressing room at a venue in New Jersey, actually.
Oh, man. See?
Where you're from there. And there's more of the story. So I was devastated because this horn had a long history with me and I with it. And so weeks later, I'm in New Orleans at the House of Blues performing there. And I've been out on the walking around the city. I come back and the doorman, who I know, said, yeah, somebody just dropped off a package for you. It's an instrument, like a saxophone or something. Where is it? He goes, well, I put it up in your dressing room. So I go to my dressing room, and there's my saxophone in the case, untouched. I mean, even my neck strap is still laying in the same position.
Oh, my gosh. So
no explanation, no nothing. Just somebody took it. And then somebody brought it back.
Someone felt guilty. How did they get it to they got it to New Orleans?
Yeah. From New Jersey, where it was taken, it traveled somehow to New Orleans and ended up in my dressing room. And thank you, if anybody's listening and knows anything about it. I'm so happy that I got that horn.
You know, someone's conscience caught up with them, maybe. That's a nice story.
Yeah.
Wow. Wow, that's amazing.
I have another saxophone. I have another saxophone that's over 100 years old.
Oh, you're kidding.
And when I bring it on tour, I have to keep it in the bay of the bus, you know, when we travel.
Yeah.
People on my tour, people, other musicians say that they can hear it playing in the night as we travel down the road.
That's hysterical.
Like the ghost horn.
That's awesome. The ghost horn.
Yeah.
Fantastic story.
Sex one album I do in the future, I think.
That's great.
Ghost horn.
Oh boy.
So where were we?
We were okay. So the album, a lot of great players on the album. I know Dave Ellison from Megadeth is on the album, right? And some great guest vocalists, including ex Judas Priest singer Tim Ripper Owens, ex Iron Maiden singer Blaze Bailey, and I. Just read on Blabbermouth, being the Blabbermouth junkie that I am, that a really exciting headline about a tour you're going to be doing with them?
Yeah, yeah. Inspired by the album that we're talking about. They sang on the album. We had such a great time working on the track together, which is called Taking on the World, that we started talking about, wouldn't it be fun to continue the comedy, which is what it's like when we're all three together, wouldn't it be fun to take that on the road and maybe do a show? And we got all excited about the possibilities and started looking into it and realized that it's nearly impossible to get us in the same country at the same time. But we did manage to get 10 dates, I think, in the Northeast in end of November. And we're really excited about the show. It's going to be a really fun time. Yeah, I'm playing. We're all like the ex-singers getting together. You know, I'm ex-Queensryche, and Tim's ex-Judas Priest, and Blaze's ex-Iron Maiden. So we're going to be doing sets of the band's music that we helped make famous. And we're singing individually. We have one band we share, and then we're, you know, we're singing on each other's songs. We're doing some harmony stuff or trading off vocal parts on some songs. It's,
you will be on stage together, maybe here and there, right?
Oh yeah, yeah, we definitely are.
Fantastic, and three powerhouses. So that's extremely exciting. I already marked my calendar for the BB King show in New York City on the 27th, I believe. What is that? The day before Thanksgiving? So you're gonna just. Is that the 27th is the day before Thanksgiving? I don't know. Thanksgiving Eve is always a fun night in New York City. So that will be excellent. That'll be so fun.
Yeah, we just shot a video for the song that they perform on the album called Taking on the World here in Seattle last week, and it was really fun hanging out with those guys. I haven't belly laughed like that in years.
Oh my God. See, that's what I like to hear. And that kind of connection between the artists plays off so well on stage too. That's something like the audience enjoys it so much more when you see that there is like a true connection between whether it's the band or whomever, you know, it's always such a, it makes the experience so much fun, more fun for the audience too. So I'm thrilled to hear that you
That's the thing about, you know, live performances. There's nothing that's been invented that can capture a live performance. You know, DVDs and all that video stuff, it's nothing. It's like watching a movie with subtitles only. You know?
Exactly.
You have to be there. You have to experience the energy transference between people, between the audience and the performer and the audience members themselves with each other. And that's what live music is about. It's a sharing situation. It's not an observational experience where you're just watching, you know, this thing go on, you know, in front of you like you see on, like, YouTube's a horrible example of live music. If anybody judges live music by YouTube videos, they're really doing themselves a disservice.
No, absolutely not.
You really have to be there and experience the moment.
You're 100% right. And it's also, you can tell when someone's walking through the motions, right? When a band is up there and you know they don't want to be there, that's so easy for the audience to see. You know what I mean? Or if they're not having a good time or they're not, the band is not, you know, communicating with each other and there's not a good vibe on the stage, that all plays off into the audience as well. So couldn't agree with you more on that.
Yeah. And even if there is a conflict, that's cool to watch too and experience, you know, like what's going to happen.
Yeah.
They're going to fly off the handle because there are going to be guitars flying through the air. <You know? laughs>
I've yet to see, I've been to a lot of shows and I've yet to see that happen, but that would be a new one for me. Well, listen, I know our time is up. I really, really appreciate you talking to us here today on Talking Metal. And again, to our listeners, be sure to check out Jeff's upcoming release, Resurrection, which again will be coming out on September 23rd, but it can be pre-ordered now, right, Jeff?
As far as I know.
Okay. Yeah. I'm hearing through the grapevine that it can be pre-ordered, coming out September 23rd. Good luck with the album, with the upcoming dates, with the Trinity Tour. We will see you on the road. Definitely be at that B.B. King show, front and center. So thanks a lot, and good luck with everything, Jeff.
Thank you, Emily. It's a pleasure talking with you, and thank you so much for the interview. I really appreciate it. Have a great day.
You too. Thanks so much.
What you just heard was I Dream in Infrared by Queensryche, going way back to the Rage for Order record, a record that truly changed my life. I'd never heard sounds like that. I just thought that it was an amazing record. And I had had the EP and I'd had the warning before that, you know, but Rage for Order definitely kind of went someplace different and touched me in a way. I mean, the EP touched me deeply, but and I liked the warning. Liked it a lot, but Rage for Order was just the album that sold me on Jeff Tate and his band Queensryche. So glad to know that Jeff's out there still making great music for us. Emily, thank you so much for doing the interview. Who do you want to interview next?
Ozzy.
Ozzy would be great. Yeah.
I'll interview anyone. I mean, you know me. I love music. I love metal, and I'm ready for my next interview.
I would like to interview Chris DeGarmo. He was on the podcast many, many years ago. Chris DeGarmo, for you guys who don't know, was really one of the big creative forces behind Queensryche, along with Jeff Tate and Michael Wilton, and you know, well, the whole band obviously were a big part of the Queensryche sound. But Chris DeGarmo left the band many, many years ago and hasn't really been heard from much at all. Again, he did come on Talking Metal a number of years back, way back, probably at this point, 7-8 years ago. But, you know, no one has really known what he's been up to, what he's doing, but he did resurface. And when I say resurface, he resurfaced musically. He recently recorded an EP with his daughter. And this isn't metal. This is, I'd call it acoustic rock or folk rock. It's really good, though. And if you listen closely, I think you can hear his style, his guitar style, even on the acoustic song. He wrote this song with his daughter. Yeah, on the record, it says, you know, we wrote the music in our living room and recorded it in our basement. And it's good. It's good. His daughter's got a great voice. And again, this is not the type of song we usually play on Talking Metal, but because we're talking Queensryche and because it's Chris DeGarmo's new release, fairly new, a little, you know, number of months old at this point, we're gonna play it for you. Okay, and if you're interested, just search Chris DeGarmo, The Rue online. You'll end up on the site and you can buy it with PayPal. This is Love Song. And Emily, big thanks to you for co-hosting and doing that interview with Jeff Tate.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Now get your saxophone out. We're going to... All right. You can support Talking Metal with... buying a t-shirt on the website in the merch section. You can like our Facebook page. I'm still trying to get Emily to like our Facebook page. And you can do a PayPal donation. You can use our Amazon links. I just got a $100 check from Amazon. Thank you guys. That's awesome. Love it. What else can you do? You can leave a review on iTunes. All those things help what we do here. Follow me on Twitter at Talking Metal. Follow Emily at Emily Striegel. We'll have those linked through today's show notes. Okay, thanks, Emily.
Thanks, Mark.
Okay, this is Love Song by The Rue, Chris DeGarmo and his daughter. Check it out.
The fight, you think you're right, and all alone, so did I. Broke down a moment like that other time, recycled lines torn open wide. So I wrote about it, joked about it, and I know the ins and outs loud. So I wrote a love song, I sing about. And when the night is near gone, I hope the light will bring us home. And may our words be burnt before the dawn. Slow. It last a look inside our rigid minds. Breathe now and settle down. We'll come around. Revisions welcome and allow. Cause you know. So